Hello, and welcome to Between the Rows. I'm Ed White, your host this week. Today, we're going to hear about how farmers can take advantage of high new crop 2022 prices without exposing themselves to the sort of contract defaults that have made 2021 such a nightmare for many. We'll hear about the relief at the Canadian Food Grains Bank over its core funding being continued. But first, a message from our sponsor.
At your Nutrien Ag Solutions retail, we take seed seriously. Getting it right for your farm requires the right knowledge. That's why we operate the largest retail seed trial program in Western Canada. Our local experts can provide you with advice for balancing maturity with disease traits and getting the best seed to your crop. After all, we take your harvest seriously too. Talk to your local retail today or visit NutrienAgSolutions.ca.
For decades, the Canadian Food Grains Bank has been probably the most visible charity that farmers have supported. Whether it's through community grow projects or church luncheon fundraisers, the Food Grains Bank has allowed the rural community to help fight hunger around the world. While much of its money comes from donations, federal governments have often multiplied that money, making its impact far greater. However, that money is not permanent and needs to be renewed every few years, always leaving uncertainty hanging in its future. To the relief of the Food Grains Bank, its government funding, $25 million per year for 3 years, has just been renewed for another 3 years. Here's International Development Minister Harjeet Sajjan explaining why the government is such a supporter of the charity.
Now, the Canadian Food Grains Bank has been a very important partner for Canada's humanitarian work since 1983. And in 2019, 2020 alone, you have reached more than 900,000 people who were living through humanitarian emergencies across 33 countries, including the Democratic Republic of Congo, Ethiopia, Lebanon, and South Sudan. And all of them depended on your help. Now, even before COVID-19, conflict was a major driver of a food crisis. Now, the pandemic has resulted in the single largest increase in global hunger ever recorded. Now, over 500,000 people are now facing famine conditions, while 45 million in 43 countries are teetering on the brink of famine. And globally, up to 283 million people are living with acute food insecurity. We must work together to reverse these trends. And I just want to say that guided by Canada's Feminist International Assistance Policy, we are committed to improving nutrition for the world's poorest and most marginalized, especially women and girls, by giving them better access to nutritious foods and services. The importance of women and girls cannot be underestimated. In many countries, women plant the food, work the fields, harvest the crops, and then cook the meals. Yet far too often, they are the ones who eat last and eat the least.
Here's Canadian Food Grains Bank Executive Director Andy Harrington talking about the organization's evolution.
At its very beginning, Canadian Food Grains Bank began with a dream. A dream that one day, everyone in the world would be able to get enough to eat. Now, for the prairie grain farmers who helped to found the Food Grains Bank, that people should be starving to death in a world of abundance was an absolute disgrace. And they were practical people who weren't about to sit idly by. Instead, they were determined to put faith into action. And when a way to make their vision a reality didn't exist, like farmers do, they came together to make it happen. I'm always inspired by how this organization came to be, from our roots with business owners and farms on the prairies today, till today, as one of Canada's leading humanitarian agencies, made up of 15 member agencies working with their partners in our joint mission to end hunger. Now, we're still strongly supported by those same farmers, and now we've been joined by thousands of other Canadians in churches and communities across the countries. And what adds to how remarkable this story is that our Canadian government came behind this idea of a world without hunger from the very beginning. And for almost 40 years, has provided ongoing and constant support to the notion that every person in the world deserves enough to eat. As a Canadian, despite this accent, I'm proud that the commitment of my elected leaders and civil servants have joined with us to end global hunger, and I'm proud that that commitment has stood the test of time. Sadly, as the minister noted, the enormous need that exists in the majority world for emergency food, whilst once on a decline for a number of years, is rising once again. Climate change is leading to more natural disasters. I'm speaking to you from southwestern British Columbia in the middle of the Fraser Valley, where we've recently experienced one of those. There are more people living in developing countries who are vulnerable. Conflict in places like Syria and South Sudan are leading to food systems failures and the inability of people to get enough food for their families in the ways they once could. And of course, as we've all experienced, the global pandemic has led to disastrous economic consequences for the people around the world, none more so than vulnerable people already living on the edge of hunger. Because of the support of the Government of Canada, our members have been able to provide support for people around the world affected by these food system failures and emergencies. And the efforts of many thousands of Canadians who support the Food Grains Bank have been amplified through the grant.
Farmer Jan McIntyre talks here about her commitment to the charity.
As a donor, I find it to be a powerful statement that 15 Canadian church and church-based organizations overcome theological differences to work together in partnership through the Canadian Food Grains Bank to offer assistance to those who are living with hunger. I also greatly appreciate and respect the Canadian Food Grains Bank approach of working in partnership with local partners and organizations already present in a country. With those who understand the particular challenges relevant to that area and who carry a long-term commitment to the region. Not only does this approach bring practical value, it also respects and offers dignity to the people of the countries and communities we help.
What does all the fundraising and commitment from Canadian farms, rural communities, and across the country help achieve in the long run? Here's Minister Sajjan's take.
Because every child has a gift to offer this world and have an impact. But what they don't have is the opportunity that we have here in places like Canada. And I always look at it as it's not that we're just trying to help. We will help ourselves when we help these kids, because you never know what type of gift these kids can offer the world. Or to their community. And so when I look at the work that's being done, it's not just about providing food. It's about creating a future for these children and the impact that they'll have for one another. Because you know that the work that they're doing now, the impact that it has on families, that they in turn will later on, when they grow up, provide the means and be able to help others as well.
This is Between the Rows. ...2021 has been a great year for crop prices. That's fantastic if you're a farmer with a lot of crop. But for thousands of farmers, 2021 brought a terrible drought and dreadful yields. Many who signed grain contracts locking in 2021-22 prices found they didn't have enough crop to meet the contracts and had to buy themselves out at very high prices. Right now, new crop 2022-23 prices look very attractive, but farmers are understandably anxious about committing to anything in the wake of the drought. I spoke to advisor David Derwin of PI Financial about how farmers can take advantage of the prices without exposing themselves to too much risk.
So David, in 2020-2021, a lot of guys took out contracts and got into positions that in a normal-ish kind of year would have been absolutely fine, but They found themselves in the drought and with the wild price action, getting caught out either with production or prices or both. And I'm wondering, from your perspective in dealing in this area, what have we learned about marketing in the last year?
Well, certainly no one's going to forget last year. And like any business, especially a farming business, which is so impacted by markets, both on inputs and on outputs, it's all about having flexibility and being adaptable. And it's about having options, and pardon the pun, but options, marketing options, like having access and using and understanding call options, using put options, giving you that flexibility. And what I think we're going to continue to see, and we certainly saw it last year, is that having those options in place really let you have an alternative to simply just pricing physical, you know, deferred delivery contract. That really gave you way more latitude in how you're going to approach it. So if you've got options and you like prices, you know, when canola got to, you know, be at 600 or 700 or 800 or eventually 900, those prices were very enticing. And I think if you had the ability to look at that and say, okay, if I am going to price some grain, maybe what I'll do is I'll look at buying some calls to protect my production and to still benefit if there's any upside. And that would be a way to also offset any buyouts that may have occurred. You could also use options in a similar matter. Instead of pricing that grain, you could buy some put options. So you've got the downside floor price in place, minimum floor price protection, kind of like price insurance, but you still have all the upside, and most importantly, you haven't committed any of your grain. So you really want to have that flexibility to separate your pricing decisions and your delivery decisions. And I think that is going to be, always has been a focus of mine and an area that I really believe we can help clients with. But going forward after this year, certainly more and more people are going to take note of that and start to look at how they can be used.
So we've got, you know, a winter, normally it's a pretty heavy marketing season over the winter, but this year there may be less because there's just less crop in the bin, and certainly from what we've been talking about, a lot less, which is not already been priced. But I guess as we look forward to the 2022-23 new crop year and pricing for that, which a lot of people probably are going to start doing at some point, how do we approach that with what we learned this year, the dangers we saw, and the sort of unique, still droughted circumstances we're operating in?
Yeah, and that is a conversation that already I am having with people for next year. And I mean, this year's crop isn't necessarily fully in the bin, right? If you're still harvesting beans or corn or whatever it might be. But that is a conversation that we're having already for next year. And it still comes back to that same point about having that flexibility and having options, and in particular, using put options, call options to do so, because prices are very good. They're still trending higher. And, well, I think one can be patient and there's no rush. Instead of just, like, here's a perfect example. Someone, client calls in out from Alberta and was looking at some very, very good prices for new crop wheat for next year. So we start looking at that and said, well, here's a couple things that you can do, right? You don't necessarily need to lock in with the elevator, commit your production when we're still, like you point out, having dry conditions, low stocks. So we don't want to give up on any opportunities to the upside. But just as important, we don't want to expose to too much risk on the production side. So the same thing can apply. If you're seeing some very, very good basis levels, you know, some really good cash bids, maybe you do some up to the level only that you're comfortable with. But then you can always turn around and add on to that some call option strategies that protect that to some extent if it goes higher. This way, you don't have to deal with any kind of, you know, buyout situation or concern on production. Likewise, markets also have put options for the downside where you can lock in a minimum floor price, less your basis, of course, but at least on the futures, you can have some downside protection in place And if it goes up higher and higher and higher and you've already spent, you know, a certain amount on premium, well, that could be the best money you've ever spent, given that you don't have to deal with the risk on the production going into another year, which in many areas has been very dry for a few years in a row.
And I know as an options specialist, you know, a year ago you were recommending people take options positions, and that they were, you know, well suited for an environment like this. And options are always a hard sell on the average person. I'm wondering though, after the experience of the last year, if people that you're talking to, you know, this fall, are more open to exploring the role that options could play in their hedging strategies.
Yeah, definitely. There's been an increase in interest that in it, and also people looking at having an account set up and in place so that they're ready to go and make some of those additional marketing decisions. It's all about having more tools in the toolbox, and for people who use them, I mean, some clients have been using them for years and quite happy with the strategies and the process and how options fit into it. For new people, I really believe, and I've seen it already, where this past year has been a bit of an eye-opener in terms of making sure that you've got all the marketing tools that are out there available to you, because they don't want to go through that again. I've had some people say, you know what, I'm never going to forward price any grain again, which might be, you know, a bit of an extreme reaction, but it's that sentiment and that feeling and that concern that going forward, they're going to be much more leery. So if we can provide them with another tool to use, then all of a sudden it makes some of those pricing decisions a lot easier, because you don't have to worry about your production risk. And that is going to be very, very important going forward. It puts more pricing power in the hands of the farmers.
Yeah, I guess there's one route you could take is say, I'm just never going to price anything ever again ahead of being in the bin. The other right. is to find something like options contracts, which give you a chance to protect some prices without that exposure risk of not having the crop or being sort of wrong priced. All you've got at risk is the premium with options.
Exactly. And I saw that all last year where, you know, you always want to work in increments, right? Whether it's 10%, 25%, a third of your crop, whatever it might be, but you have a certain amount that you're comfortable pricing. I think when prices got really high, and we could see a replay of that again going forward, but when prices got very high, it's very enticing, but you don't want to have a situation where you don't want to do anything because it's, we could see a replay of the dryness and the drought, but you also don't want to let these high prices pass you by either. So it's a balance. And it's a balance of strategies, right? And it also works in conjunction with your storage plan. How much room do you have to store your grain? A lot of clients can store all of their production, so that gives them even more flexibility when they can really not have to worry about delivering just for cash flow. If they don't need it, they've got a place that they can store it. So it all works together, but definitely on a go-forward basis, it's going to give them that comfort and confidence that, yeah, there are other tools out there. We don't always have to do the same thing and get too caught up in that. You've got flexibility in that. Again, I saw it this year where people who either replaced their sales or just bought puts instead, and then canola went up another $200 a ton. Well, that's, the put option premium you might have invested in is more than made up for. And the fact, again, that you don't have to have your production committed to the elevators. Big benefit.
Well, thanks very much, David, for taking us through this. And I guess we'll see how it unfolds.
Always a pleasure, Ed. Thank you very much.
That was David Durbin of PI Financial in Winnipeg. David's views can be often seen in his column in the pages of the Manitoba Cooperator, and I often quote him in my column in the Western Producer. That's all for this week. Join us again next week for another edition of Between the Rows. I'm Ed White,
and it was my pleasure being your host.
At your Nutrien Ag Solutions retail, we take seed seriously. Getting it right for your farm requires the right knowledge. That's why we operate the largest retail seed trial program in Western Canada. Our local experts can provide you with advice for balancing maturity with disease traits and getting the best seed to your crop. After all, we take your harvest seriously too. Talk to your local retail today or visit NutrienAgSolutions.ca.